Pop Spotting 126.
Monday, September 12th, 2011.
You're creature of the night, Michael. Just like out of a comic book. You're a vampire, Michael.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I am Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and this week we're going to do something I like to call the Fun at the Amusement Park double feature. This week I want to talk about The Lost Boys from 1987 and Adventureland from 2008.
Yeah, now both films, at least one of them, takes place largely in an amusement park. Another one just has it as part of the plot. We will admit that a natural match might have been Zombieland to go with Adventureland, but I thought, you know, Zombieland is a little obvious.
And everybody likes
Zombieland. Love Zombieland. We might save that for maybe a zombie double feature. This time we just want to go back and share some love for an 80s classic. So let's start with The Lost Boys.
The Lost Boys is from 1987. It was directed by Joel Schumacher and it starred Jason Patrick, the two Coreys, Kiefer Sutherland and Diane Weiss.
The two Coreys being Corey Haim and Corey Feldman. And basically it's a vampire film. I don't think we're giving anything away there. It's basically the story of a newly single mom, Lucy, and her two boys, Michael and Sam. And they moved to her dad's place, grandpa's place, in fictional Santa Carla, California, a neighborhood that's known for its amusement park and is also referred to as the mass murder capital of the world.
Santa Cruz, California stands in for Santa Carla, mm-hmm. and the amusement park is the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk.
That's right. In fact, that amusement park has appeared in other films as well. It was in Sudden Impact and Harold and Maude, Dangerous Minds, and Brotherhood of Justice, which also starred Kiefer Sutherland.
And Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. As this film does, but in any case, this was by Joel Schumacher, and what I like about him in general is his range. I mean, the film before that he did this one was St. Elmo's Fire, was kind of this Brat Pack film, and the film that came after was like a remake of a French film, so he can be all over the place, but here he does his best take on a vampire horror slash comedy film. And, you know, I mean, I think horror slash comedy is a very common combination now, but at least, and when I saw it, it was relatively new, and I thought it was kind of scary and funny at the same time. I think it did that well.
I thought it was scary initially too, but over the years, and I've watched this movie a lot of times, is that I think it's actually more funny than scary now.
Yeah, and I think that's true. Either we're becoming more sophisticated filmmakers, or, you know, we just have that opinion now of any film out of the 80s, but I also remember as a child actually being scared, so that's why I enjoyed it a great deal. Now, Schumacher did Flatliners, another movie with Kiefer Sutherland, so he does use a lot of the same actors in his various films. But let's talk about some of the actors or performers here in Lost Boys, and starting with, I guess, the interestingly named character, Michael Emerson.
Michael Emerson is played by Jason Patrick, and mm-hmm. I'm guessing Michael is supposed to be maybe a senior in high school, judging by how Jason Patrick looks, but he has a younger brother named Sam, who's played by the late Corey Haim,
yeah.
and his mom is played by Diane Weiss, who is an actress I really admire, and she does a really good job in this film. I think at certain points, like at the very end when everything is revealed to her and there's evidence of something really bad happening, she gets a little hysterical, like, what are you guys all talking about? You're all crazy. But Right. Other than that, I think she does a good job.
No, I mean, what I like is that in any vampire slash teen film where they're disaffected, misunderstood, et cetera, the parents are frequently cast as just clueless or cartoons, and I felt that Diane Weiss' performance made Lucy very sympathetic, even though it really wasn't a film about her. So you talked about Michael Emerson and his younger brother Sam. You do have the leader of the young rebel motorcycle slash vampire group, which is Kiefer Sutherland, and I think that this is a good role for him as David, the lead vampire, the lead young vampire.
I think Kiefer Sutherland is best when he's playing the heavy, when he's playing
kind of a bad guy.
Kind of the bad guy, like in Stand By Me when he played Ace, and there are several other movies where he's kind of an unsavory character, and I think he does better at that. And when I started to watch 24, that was one of the things that kept me from enjoying it, was I really felt that Kiefer Sutherland was a little bit miscast.
Or at least maybe he has to be a bad person, or there must be a sinister side to it, which there was to some extent, but because he plays that so well. I agree that here in Lost Boys, the element of it that is horror, the element that it is scary, that does have the drama, is because his performance is pretty solid, pretty realistic, pretty committed to it, even though it does have kind of a ridiculous side to the story as well. He makes it feel scary.
The close-ups on his face in a couple of scenes are very unnerving. The camera just just stays on his face for a second too long. And I think that really helps to add to the menace that he has.
Right, right. And as far as we did mention Corey Haim, this film was known for having the Coreys, plural, two young men that were together, staples of 80s films. The other one was Corey Feldman, and he was playing Edgar, and he had a partner in this film played by Jameson Newlander. They were the Frog brothers, Edgar and Alan Frog. And in this story, they're, you know, they work in a comic book shop. They really understand pop culture and vampire culture, and their mission in this little sleepy town is to eradicate it of these vampires.
I like their role because in a traditional vampire movie, the vampire hunters are a little bit more badass. they're tough and they're smart, and the Frog brothers, while they know what they're doing, they provide a lot of the comic relief in this film.
Well, and they are kids. They are young. And when you, I like how they're introduced in the sense that when you meet them, when Michael and Sam come across them at first and they're spouting all of these things about all these things going on in the town, they just sound really pretty much like young kids that have overactive imaginations. And that's also a staple of these young sort of young people movies. But I think that they were a perfect match, and those characters were great to play that role in a vampire film.
The finished product of this film was very different from the original script. The original script was more of an adaptation of Peter Pan. And in fact, the David character is named Peter. And another character that was changed quite a bit is the character of Star, played by Jamie Gertz.
Star
in the original screenplay, Star was a boy.
Right.
And I think that making Star a girl was not necessarily needed, or maybe might not even have been the best move.
Well, so what we have in this film is newcomers to town, and the bad boys, the biker gang, who happen to be vampires, and these young men trying to find their way, find a community. And the way that these vampires kind of lure in Michael is, you know, not through the rebellion, not through being really cool, but through Star. And I will admit, I mean, I still haven't quite gotten a hold of how I feel about Jamie Gertz's performance. I think she's playing at being ditzy, but she either does it too well, or in fact, she's just a bad actress, because it's a little too flighty, a little too out there for me.
I remember seeing an interview with Jamie Gertz. They asked her about the character Star, and she tried out for the film, but she was told that they were initially looking for a blonde.
Right, and I can see that. So, I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe my expectations were just not quite right, but fortunately, there's very little attention paid to her. I agree that she's pretty unnecessary, just as that hook to introduce Michael and Sam and this family to these bad boys around town. A few other characters probably to note. Well, one of the henchmen of Kiefer Sutherland's character is a familiar face to anybody, again, who loved 80s films, or at least that style.
Alex Winter, who played Bill in the two Bill and Ted movies.
Right.
And he's actually one of three henchmen, and the henchmen don't really do a whole lot. David is, you know, a very kind of scary guy, but the three henchmen kind of stand around and look pretty.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're your yes men, they're henchmen, and they stand around henching, which is what I imagine henchmen do. And unfortunately, no, Alex Winter doesn't stick around long, doesn't have much to do apart from get Chinese food. But I mean, I thought that was pretty notable. And then you do have sort of the love interest or potential love interest of the mother character, Max, played by Edward Herman. And you might know him as Richard Gilmore on Gilmore Girls. And, you know, I think a pretty good character here, in the sense that he is standing apart and saying, this is insane. What the heck is up? What is the problem with you kids?
The thing about Max that I like is his 80s, very 80s apartment.
That's true. I can see that too. In fact, this film made in the 80s really exhibits a lot of what you might expect. The fashion, the men with blonde poofy hair, the denim jackets, the leather jackets. But it's not too much, I don't think. It's a recent balance, and it's certainly a product of its time.
Lucy says to Max at the very beginning of the film, well, they dress better than we did, but now I'm not so sure about that.
Right. So, I mean, they in fact, in the film, at least, are conscious enough here at the late 80s of how ridiculous some people looked in that decade. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really liked about The Lost Boys, is that it was clever enough to be self-aware, a little, you know, self-referential, a little meta. And when we're talking about vampires, they go through some of the understandings and rules of vampire stories. And sometimes they go with it, and sometimes they defy your expectations. I mean, now we've had a whole genre of films that take these expectations of zombies or vampires and turn them on their head or mock them. But I think this was an early, you know, sort of example of that. And it's, again, a great balance.
I think it's one of the first ones to address the rules of vampires. I don't really remember a movie before this that addressed the whole holy water and crucifix and garlic business. Yeah.
So that is a lot of fun. And, you know, it's the universal appeal of these stories. Misunderstood youth, not believed by the older establishment, fighting forces bigger than themselves. It's a great film in that genre as well. And overall, I mean, you can tell it wasn't a big budget film. You can tell there were some seams, and that might be where you laugh a little bit at the film today, but it was pretty effective with using what they had.
They did very well with what they had. They built the vampire lair set with very old pieces. You could tell it was probably just old props, and I thought it was very well set up and very well shot. I think the scene where they attacked the surf Nazis was very well lit and very effective because of the camera work.
Yeah, I mean, I think it had great cinematography for a teen movie. Again, my expectations wouldn't be that high, and just watching it, I was more conscious of the art of it than I would be of any other film in this category. I do want to mention the soundtrack to the film. Of course, it is an 80s movie. There is an 80s soundtrack to it.
The soundtrack has several covers. Roger Daltrey does a cover of Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me by Elton John, and Echo and the Bunnymen do a cover of the Doors' People Are Strange.
Right, right.
And my favorite song on the soundtrack, you only hear for a second. It's called Beauty Has Her Way by Mummy Calls, and that's my favorite song in the soundtrack.
Well, and also there's an orchestral score to it. It was actually done by the same guy who did the soundtrack to The Debt, which we talked about last
Thomas
week.
Newman.
That's right. And what I love about it is that, again, it shows his range, because in this movie, it's very Miami Vice. It's very 80s. It's very synthy, you know, a lot of guitars. I thought it was a Michael Mann kind of soundtrack, the way it sounded. So that was kind of cool to, I guess, rediscover. But overall, a really nicely packaged, fun, yet somewhat scary film from the 80s. I do think that it owes a lot to Kiefer Sutherland and Diane Wiest for giving you solid and serious, totally committed performances so everybody else can run around like they're in the Goonies or something.
Kiefer Sutherland and Diane Wiest do a really great job. I think Jason Patrick is really trying, but there's one thing that I noticed. There are several scenes in the lair where we see a poster of Jim Morrison on the walls lair, and they're not really people I would peg to be Jim Morrison fans. And there are several shots where you see the Jim Morrison poster and then you see Jason Patrick's face, and I'm wondering, is he like auditioning for the Doors movie?
Well, he might have been a better choice for that Doors
movie. I think he would have been a great choice for that movie. Definitely better than Val Kilmer.
So that's The Lost Boys. I should mention there were actually two straight to DVD sequels, The Lost Boys to the Tribe, Lost Boys to the Thirst. Apparently, Joel Schumacher had wanted nothing to do with it, completely disavowed it, and he really wanted to do a sequel called The Lost Girls. And I kind of regret we didn't get that. So let's move on to the second movie in our double feature, and one I honestly like a lot more, and it was Adventureland. And although it came out in 2009, it was set in 1987, the year in which The Lost Boys was actually made. It was directed by Greg Mottola. He actually did Superbad, but I have to say right up that one thing I'm happy about is this movie is nothing like Superbad. In fact, it's somewhat autobiographical, which I think adds to how real it feels. But who's in Adventureland?
Jesse Eisenberg plays James. He's just graduated from college, and he wants to go to school, and he wants to backpack across Europe, but he's left in the lurch by his folks, and he has no alternative but to get a job at an amusement park in Pittsburgh, where his friend Tommy works, and where he meets kind of a motley crew of people that you would expect to meet at an amusement park. Emily, played by Kristen Stewart, who's kind of a moody emo chick.
Right.
Tech guy Mike, played by Ryan Reynolds, who's kind of a player. Lisa, who's a hot girl, played by Margarita LaViva. And Joel, played by Martin Starr, who's kind of a nerd.
Right. And of course, this park is run by Bobby, played by Bill Hader, and his wife Paulette, played by Kristen Wiig. And you know, hear those two names, you think about Judd Apatow films, you think of just total madcap adventures and slapstick madness. And that's what I really like about Adventureland, is that it's exactly not that. It is, in fact, a very deliberately paced, kind of somber, if not dark, exploration of these characters and the world they live in. I mean, in fact, I would say, if anything, you know, Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig are the only kind of awkward pegs in this film.
I really wish somebody would come out with a cut without those two in the movie. They just make me cringe in every scene that they're in, because they're doing something completely different from everybody else, and I can't figure out how they think they fit in the film.
Well, and then again, it's the everybody else that really makes this film shine. I mean, that's where I want to focus. For example, Jesse Eisenberg. Yes, he's now known as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, and he was good in that. but I think this role is much closer to what is ideal for him for that lanky, awkward teen sort of role, or at least young person role. I mean, this is a position, this is a role that might have gone to that other
Michael
dude,
Cera.
Michael Cera, but I think Eisenberg really sells that he is fantastic here, and the movie overall kind of exploring that limbo, that awkward, uncomfortable place where you're just floating around between maybe getting out of college and having to face the real world where you want to grow up and take that step, but on the other hand, you're scared to take that step yourself. You're waiting for perhaps someone to push you.
It's oddly sweet also, the way that the characters interact with each other, and some of the scenes really catch me off guard because they're so emotional. For instance, through the whole movie, we see his friend Tommy beat James up. They kind of have a very adversarial relationship, and they're constantly at each other's throats. But James needs a huge favor at one point in the film, and Tommy helps him in a very kind of, in a way that you wouldn't expect.
Well, I like Tommy in the sense that just, and in fact, even that hot girl, you know, you described Margarita LaViva, Lisa, as just the hot girl, and then you have Tommy, who's just sort of the weirdo or the freak, and yet you peel off the layers and there's a much more complex story there. So I thought that was really a nice touch. I thought that, you know, Lisa is somebody that you figure is easy, that everybody's after. It's all about sex appeal, and she really exudes that and lives it. But it turns out that, you know, she's actually playing a role. She's living up to the expectations that other people have of her, and it turns out there's a lot more there. I mean, all of these characters are multidimensional. I would say all of these characters are flawed. I mean, they make bad decisions. You are cringing. You've been there. These mistakes are very human. But again, that's what's surprising, I think, about Adventureland. It's a film that I liked, but that I liked even more as I thought about it. Now, we talked about Eisenberg. I think it's fantastic, but it wouldn't be a young person's sort of lost in limbo film without a love triangle, and the love interest is Kristen Stewart's character, Emily. And, I mean, I might have just dismissed her out of hand as the girl from the vampire films, you know, but here I thought she did a great job playing someone that was very complex, very conflicted, and someone that you felt a great deal of sympathy for.
Emily lives with her father and her stepmother, and I think everything that you really need to know about Emily, you find out in the scenes with her parents, as is true with James's character also.
Yeah, I think James in particular, in fact, the relationship between the parents and the young people, I mean, we keep saying kids, but these aren't teens. You know, they are struggling with young adulthood, but those relationships between Em and her dad and stepmother, and of course with James and his parents, played by Wendy Malick, who you might know, and Jack Gilpin as well, I really like the dynamic there because there's no need for exposition. The interactions are all you need to know to explain why these characters are the way they are, why they make the decisions that they do, and why they sometimes do the bad things that they do. You know, Em kind of has issues with the stepmom, who's kind of creepy and scary and intimidating in the film.
The actress, Mary Birdsong, the character is described as having had a wig because she had a nervous breakdown after her divorce. I don't know if it's because of the wig or the way that she's lit or the way that she talks, but something about her just scared me so much.
Yeah, and you can see her from Em's perspective and why she acts the way she does. Maybe that's why her relationships with men go the way they do. And meanwhile, you have James, who has this mom and dad, and I'm sorry to say, you know, his dad is pretty impotent, pretty weak. It's Wendy Malick. It's the mom's character that's strong, that's wearing the pants.
Control freak.
And because of that, you see why perhaps James is the way he is, why he's as awkward as he is, and why he struggles with relationships the way he does. But it's not spelled out like a after school special, you know, on ABC, The More You Know. No, it's just very layered performances, nuanced characters, and just really well put together.
This movie feels like a lot of other films, but in a really good way. It reminded me a lot of Almost Famous. Like, the character
definitely,
of James
definitely
is like the main character in Almost Famous, and it feels a little bit like Juno too, and it does definitely reminds me of The Graduate.
Oh, certainly. I mean, that's what I agree with that. I mean, the best parts of some of these other great films, you sense the authenticity, perhaps, of Almost Famous, because this film is also somewhat autobiographical by the writer and director, and, you know, it feels like a real world because he lived that life. It feels like Juno because it's young people kind of getting lost and perhaps even being betrayed by the machinations of adults and their world and coming to terms with that. You know, you mentioned Juno. Rainn Wilson has this brief appearance in Juno that takes you briefly out of that film the same way, you know, I'm sorry to say, that that Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig somewhat do in this film as well. But that's not enough to derail it. I was just listening to a great episode of This American Life. It's snapshots of real life, and they did an entire show about people who work at carnivals, you know, carnies, like these people, and the things that they covered in terms of what actually happens and how these communities work and how there's a rivalry between the games people and the rides people, for example, that is in this movie too. And so because those parts come ring true, the character moments and the other moments ring true as well. I do like that this film takes its time. I do like the fact that this film is rooted in realism, and the ending, you know, it's the ending that you kind of want for these characters, but it is still, you know, incomplete and unfinished in the way that I think real life is too.
We see James maybe being happy for the first time in a long time at the end, and it might not last, but it's really, I think it's a really good way to close it out.
Yeah, and so just overall a great ride, you know, not a slapstick, a teen sex romp, a very realistic and thoughtful film. And I did want to ask before we end about the soundtrack. We talked about the soundtrack for Lost Boys. This film is set in the same year, and I think they put a lot of thought into the soundtrack as well.
It's a combination of kind of 80s alternative and 80s pop. Like, you have The Replacements and Lou Reed, but you also have Exposé and Rock Me Amadeus,
right?
Which I think the whole Rock Me Amadeus thing in this movie is really funny, because the characters joke about how they've heard Rock Me Amadeus over and over, and it's become like torture. And I think every person has a Rock Me Amadeus, like a song in their life that they hear for a little while during one summer or something, that reminds them of a certain period of time, but they've heard it so much it drives them crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there's that song like that every year, at least until people stop listening to the radio. But again, it rings true. These characters feel familiar. Their conflicts, their struggles, their feelings. There's just so much to chew on, so much to think about. And I really felt the year that Adventureland came out, it was just lost, and it deserves a bigger audience than it got.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't checked it out, you should. That's Adventureland from 2009. And as for The Lost Boys, I'm presuming you've seen it, but if you've not, I think you should check it out as well.
I do every year.
Yes, you do. So that is our amusement park double feature. You know, we talked a lot about the soundtracks of these films, and we discussed last week people are recommending a soundtrack top five. What do you think? For this Wednesday, we can do that.
I'm game.
And I'll do a list too.
Good.
We'll actually do it together. So stay tuned for that. But in any case, we'd love to hear your thoughts about these films or any other films you think go great together. Please take a moment to drop us a line, because I'm not kidding. We are powered by your feedback.
You can call us at 815-310-0808. You can also leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, or you can drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net.
Do consider the voicemail line. We love to hear your voices. But of course, if you're on Facebook, that's one way you can interact with us or other listeners, at facebook.com/popspotting, or if you're Twitter addicts like we are, you can find us at twitter.com/popspotting.
If you're having trouble keeping up with our show, you can sign up to get an email every time a new episode is posted. It's one of the many ways to stay connected with us. Just head on over to popspotting.net/subscribe.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday for another love letter to one of our favorite series, this one taking us into deep space.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and mahalo to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen. Bottoms up, man.
Bombs away.